Good morning, Your Honors.
Counsel?
This appeal is about Ameritech's, AT&T's, FMLA processing guidelines. Some of these policies violate the FMLA and the Department of Labor's implementing regulations. Some of these policies that violate the FMLA and the regs directly caused the termination of my clients, Mr. and Mrs. Taylor. In addition, material issues of fact were presented that should have precluded dismissal on summary judgment of Mrs. Taylor's retaliation claim. Now, the policies and regulations that we assert that Ameritech's FMLA processing unit violates can be categorized in three areas. First of all, there are those regulations that they follow that choke the reasonable flow of communication from the employee to the employer. And this is critical because under the FMLA, an employee has at least 15 days to provide medical certification of their need for FMLA.
What is it that you think they were required to do here?
Primarily, we're looking at three main areas in terms of...
They have to let the Taylors fax these reports from their home?
They should allow the Taylors to fax them from their home or from work?
That's right. I don't think that's right.
Well, Your Honor, I would assert that when you're talking about a minimum of 15 days for an employee who's under stress, may be ill, may have a family member who's ill, 15 days is critical. You should allow every reasonable opportunity to provide the information.
Yeah, but, I mean, the chances of fraud increase if you can send it from your home.
The chances of fraud do increase if they can send it from their home. However, the regulations have already anticipated that, and there's a method by which an employer can say, we have concerns about this. They can consult with a medical advisor who can simply call the doctor or the healthcare provider and confirm, did you fill this out on this date? Does it appear to be accurate?
There is a regulation that requires them to allow the person to fax from her home.
I believe that the regulation that would allow them to fax from home would be 307B, 29 CFR 307B. Basically, and also 29 USC, the FMLA itself, which requires that the employer provide it to the employer.
I understand you. It just requires the employee to provide the requested certification. Why does it? It doesn't say anything about where the fax comes from.
That's correct. And that's why Ameritech's policy is more restrictive.
I don't understand you. I don't see that this regulation deals with the specifics of how you establish a machinery for getting the notice within the time period.
Well, because you're right, Your Honor. The regs don't say you can't prevent an employee from faxing it. It says that you must provide it to the employer. But when you consider that policy in conjunction with some of the other policies that we've identified, the totality of these policies restrain the free and reasonable flow of communication from the employee to the employer.
I don't understand. It seems very sensible for them to outsource their processing of these applications and to require the doctor to fax the report. What's wrong with that?
I don't have any issue with outsourcing the FMLA processing to an outside corporation. However, if you're going to do that, you've got to follow the regulations and allow the employee to have some involvement in getting the information to the employer. Classic example is the fact that they do not recognize the employee's diligent good faith efforts to provide the information to the FMLA processing unit. And if you're going to put the...
people were not diligent.
Your Honor,
they
I would...
diligent. They knew there was something wrong. They didn't do anything about it. They kept letting these deadlines slip. They got extra time from the employer. The interesting question is, whatever mode of communication the employer sets up, there's always the chance of a mishap, right?
Certainly. And a classic example is the...
What you seem to be arguing is that anybody can get a trial just by saying that, something happened and the form never arrived.
No, Your Honor. What we're specifically pointing out is that in the case of Ronnie Taylor, Mr. Taylor, his doctor indicated in a letter that it was faxed three times. The medical certification...
I don't believe that.
Well, that's the undisputed fact, and it was based upon...
Maybe faxed it to the wrong number three times. That I believe.
Well, the problem is the barcode issue, which we've identified in the record. Ameritech sorts these FMLA certification forms by the Social Security number of the employee. The problem in Mr. Taylor's case is he used his wife's pre-printed form, and he was never advised on the form, look, the barcode must match your Social Security number. That would have been a very simple, conspicuous notice to put on this form. The doctor didn't know this either, so when it was being faxed in, we believe that it was faxed into cyberspace. Now, Ameritech knew of this issue. They had a specific policy in place that said, if an employee says that they faxed it numerous times and you're not getting it, you're to ask the employee, does the Social Security number match the barcode? And ask for the date that the fax were sent. Despite having this very reasonable policy and knowing of this barcode problem, those steps were never followed in Mr. Taylor's case. A very simple remedy which would have allowed Mr. Taylor to cure the deficiency within the medical certification, which it has an obligation to do, as this court has pointed out before, most recently in Darst versus International Brands that was decided last Friday. In this case, Mr. Taylor could have cured the deficiency by simply saying, okay, doc, I need to know when you faxed this in. It is undisputed that Ameritech never informed Mr. Taylor, we need you to tell us what date you did that at the time he was terminated. Despite the fact that Mr. Taylor specifically called the FMLA processing unit and said, I'm going to be terminated. What can I do? My doctor says he's faxing this in.
Well, now, this doesn't affect the fax, right? This affects how it's processed by the service company.
It affects how it's received by the outside vendor.
Well, it comes into the fax, right?
It comes into a fax, and it's sorted by the barcode into the individual's particular file. Now, Ameritech says, listen, if it would have been faxed in, it would have been routed
into
the DEDRAs.
That's a problem with the fax.
In terms of the transmission itself, you mean?
Right.
It's
a
problem
with the transmission.
Right. It's apparently being faxed somewhere.
What's your explanation for these failed transmissions?
I don't have an explanation. At that point in time, if there is a problem, you know, the FMLA is a balancing act.
Well, I don't see how it's a problem for the employer if the doctor doesn't fax it to the right number.
Well, the doctor is faxing it to the correct number.
Why doesn't it arrive then?
Very good question. Because it's being routed by the barcode, and the doctor
doesn't. No, the barcode is after the fax is received. I thought your argument was these faxes weren't received.
Well, it's.
Does the fax has the barcode on it?
Correct.
Right? So what you're saying is it gets faxed.
Right.
It gets sorted by barcode.
Yes.
The barcode is wrong, so it doesn't go into his file.
Correct.
Somehow it goes into her file.
That's correct, Your Honor.
So when somebody's looking at the paper trail, it's in her file. It never gets to his file.
Right, and they're not received in paper format.
There's no problem with the fax.
You're right. Perhaps I'm not making this clear for you. But if you look at the appendix.
See, and that's to me distinguishable from her situation with the March date.
Yes.
Where her doctor clearly sends it. He sends it after the fact. I mean, way after the fact. She's supposed to get it in with a certain time. And he finally faxes it April 9th. But you have an even bigger problem with her because she goes to work on that fourth day on March 19th, right?
She goes to work on the fourth day, so there's an issue of whether or not she meets the definition of incapacitation.
Exactly.
However,
so, I mean, she's out the box on the incapacitation. So, I mean, even if you win on the facts, and she doesn't have the same facts problem that the husband has,
right.
She's actually going to work. So that's indication she's not incapacitated.
Well, the doctor certified she was incapacitated for more than 3 days, from the 16th to the 19th.
Yeah, but she goes into work the fourth day.
Well, and she may have been incapacitated for more than 3 days, not as much as 4 days. So she could have been incapacitated for more than 3 days as the doctor certified. In addition, she's suffering periodic episodes of incapacitation.
But then that has bearing on whether or not her medical condition was chronic, this issue of timing. So the fact that she goes on the fourth day, that's a problem, isn't it?
It's not
as
under
it relates to the definition of whether her medical condition is chronic.
Not under the chronic period, because chronic incapacitation includes any dates of incapacitation. It doesn't have to be 3 or more consecutive days. A chronic condition of the FMLA is any period of incapacitation. related to that chronic condition.
Right, but then that chain gets broken when somebody comes back to work.
I see that my time has expired. Would you like me to answer this question?
Yes.
I don't believe so. Under the FMLA, under the chronic condition, any period of incapacitation is covered by the FMLA. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Mihalich. Ms. Lindner?
May it please the Court, Counsel. My name is Laura Lindner, and I represent the appellee Ameritech Services in this case. First of all, I'd just like to make clear that the FMLA processing unit is not technically outsourced to another company not owned or operated by now AT&T. It's a separate group within AT&T, but it is independent from the employees'
managers. What about this problem with the barcode? So could you explain your understanding of that problem?
First of all, there is absolutely no evidence that a form was faxed from Dr. Solberg's office to the FMLA unit. What Dr. Solberg's letter says, and it's critical, is, I filled out FMLA papers for this occurrence on at least three separate occasions and either faxed them to the SBC office or gave them directly to the parents. Now, what is also significant is the form that was later discovered was in Dr. Solberg's records that we obtained through a subpoena in the litigation. At that point, there was evidence that at some point he had filled out a form. There was absolutely no evidence that that form was ever faxed to the company.
Was the barcode correct?
The barcode on the form was, in fact, a barcode attributed to Mrs. Taylor. What Mr. Taylor had presumably done is taken a form that was given to his wife, given it to Dr. Solberg. Now, had that form been faxed in, the company's system is that an optical reader reads that barcode and the form would automatically be routed to Mrs. Taylor's files, electronic files. That form does not exist in Mrs. Taylor's file, and that
so
is an undisputed fact.
So there was a search done of her file and not found there.
Correct.
So your position would be, since the doctor sent the letter saying he did it three times, he either faxed them or gave them directly to the parents, since it's not found in her file, and there was nothing written on the documents when the document was discovered, you know, like that sent thing.
Right, there's no transmittal sheet, correct.
Okay.
There's nothing to that effect. So maybe it was faxed to, you know, the wrong number. We don't know. There is also evidence in the record that on another occasion, one of the spouses used a form for the other one, and it did get routed to the other spouse's file, and the company considered it for the proper spouse. So, yes, the company uses a barcode system, but it's used to prevent human error. So you're not relying on human beings to check names and make sure these get to the right places. The forms are pre-populated with Social Security numbers to avoid that fact.
And is that explained then to participants? That is, that you need to use the correct form that your barcode is specific to you. And so if your spouse is a participant, they get the form, they have a barcode specific to them. Is that explained?
I can't say that that's explicitly part of the process, Judge, but the form, it's very self-evident. It's got a pre-printed name. The Social Security number appears on it, mm-hmm. So you can tell that it doesn't say the barcode represents your Social Security number, but it has your pre-printed name.
But it's not just a barcode. Your name is on it.
Your name's on it.
Social.
Your social and your company ID's on it, and the date that that form is printed and generated. So it's pretty obvious to anyone who would look at it that this form is specific to you and not to some other person.
But the one you found in the doctor's file was his, but, I mean, he filled it out, but it was for her.
Correct. It was filled out for Mr. Taylor, but it was populated with Mrs. Taylor's name, ID number, and Social Security number.
What do you do if you're an employee and you have a doctor who's sloppy and, you know, and you realize that you have your 15-day deadline? What can you do if this person says, I'll fax it, my fax machine is broken or something, it'll take a few days? What are you supposed to do?
The company allows you to mail in the original. So an employee can mail in an original themselves, a doctor could mail in the original themselves, so they could just get the original and simply mail it. The company has a 15-day period.
The company doesn't want you to fax it. Doesn't want to fax because, you know, it can play games with copies. But you could mail the original, or could you deliver it by hand? Or?
As long as it gets to the FMLA processing unit in San Antonio, Texas, by the deadline, it will be accepted if it's an original. Pardon me?
You'd have to mail it. You're not going to carry it by hand to San Antonio.
Right, see? Unless you work there.
But you could FedEx it or something.
Correct. And the company's policy is it's a 15-day policy with 5 extra day grace period for mailing. In addition to that, employees are given an FMLA-1 eligibility form at the time they get the MedCert form, and that form explicitly says if you need an extension, call this number, and the company routinely will grant such extension requests. Now, and also in this particular
and
case...
And I take it no extension requests were made here.
No extension requests were made. And with respect to the two particular leaves at issue in the case, mm-hmm. the plaintiffs had requested them on prior occasions, got them, but not with respect to these instances. But when they
go back for a minute, because you said they'd gotten it in the past. How many times in the past had they gotten extensions? Do you have a sense of that?
There were numerous requests. I don't, certainly more than two or three.
And those requests were granted
each
time?
Yes. The company routinely grants those requests, usually a week at a time. Now, in addition to getting the forms and having the 15 days plus 5 days for mailing, being told you can request extensions, when the Townsend Taylors were told that their FMLA requests were being denied due to the fact that the company did not receive timely medical certifications, the letter expressly advised them that they had time to submit proof of extenuating circumstances that prevented them from getting in the form on time. And presumably that's what they attempted to do by submitting letters from each of their doctors. Now, had Mr. Taylor taken the efforts that he needed to do with respect to that letter, the form was in Dr. Solberg's office file. Could have been sent within that period of time to show, we had the form. Something must have happened on our end from the doctor's office. Maybe it was never faxed, which is why it's still sitting in the doctor's file. It's our fault. In that case, the company would have said, sure, your doctor screwed up. We'll reconsider. You've now established that there were circumstances beyond your control that justified the fact that you didn't meet the deadline.
Had they ever made that kind of request for extenuating circumstances prior to these two incidents?
I don't believe so. I'm not sure whether it's not in the record, and I'm not sure if that was the case. But both the Taylors were frequent users of FMLA leave, particularly Mrs. Taylor.
And where was this policy of extenuating circumstances published?
It was specifically in the letters that they received when they were told that the requests were being denied. But the company also has an elaborate FMLA website that's accessible to all employees that has all sorts of information about the processes and procedures, in addition to information on the status of employees' requests that tells employees that they've received med certs, when they've received them. And all of that was operating at the time the Taylors were requesting leave, so they could have gotten information that way.
So you can look up your file and you can see if the doctor's fax or letter has hit the file electronically.
Yes, through a status website you can see that. You can check on that on your own to know if your doctor's complied. So then you can bug your doctor or whatever you need to do to make sure that form gets in, or request an extension of time if you think that there's an issue. I would just like to touch briefly on the issue that counsel raised at the beginning with respect to so-called policies that violate the FMLA and the DOL's implementing regulations. I think this court's decision in Darst, which came down last Friday, as counsel referenced, is dispositive. In that case, the plaintiff argued that the employer violated the FMLA because the HR manager, as opposed to a health care provider, made direct contact of the employee's doctor for clarification of medical information and also failed to give the employee an opportunity to cure a deficiency in a medical certification form. In that case, the court again made clear, citing the U.S. Supreme Court's decision in Ragsdale, that the FMLA provides no remedy unless the employer's action interfered with, restrained, or denied the employee's exercise of his FMLA rights. And because the employee couldn't establish that he was actually entitled to FMLA leave on the days in question in that case, the court said there's no harm. Same thing is true here. Neither plaintiff was harmed by any of the alleged policies or practices that counsel claims occur. With respect to the two leave requests at issue in the case, so I think based on that, Darst is dispositive. I see that my time is up. Unless the court has any other questions, I will.
Hey, thank you, Ms. Linder.
Thank you.
Mr. Mahalis, your time had expired, but you can have a minute if you'd like.
Thank you.
Just to clarify, my clients did call the FPU requesting to remedy the problem and ask for extensions and were denied them. They were told that the cases were closed. Secondly,
and what, where was that in terms of time frame?
It was after
within the 5-day period after the letter?
It was upon receipt of each final denial from Ameritech, they immediately, both of them, called and asked, what can we do? Deidre was told that the case was closed, so was Mr. Taylor. They were advised to see if you can use your accrued vacation, which they had, and were denied that. Exigent circumstances. It's undisputed. They do not consider the employee's best efforts, which is the requirement under the regulations. They will not consider it. They only consider what the doctor
what
has done.
What about Ms. Lindner's suggestion that they can mail the original of the form?
It's difficult because let's assume it takes, as we demonstrated, your health care provider up to 14 days because of its HIPAA policy, which is after FMLA, to complete the certification. It's 14 days. Now it's available for you. You've got to go and pick up your medical cert. What if you're working and you can't get it until maybe 4 days later? Now you're beyond the due date.
You ask for an extension. You explain why you have to mail it, and it will take a few days.
Mrs. Taylor was constantly advising her supervisor, this is the status with my FMLA. I've got this HIPAA policy. I'm working on this right now. I understand this is going to cost me my job. And continued to call her health care provider and update her supervisor as to the status. She was diligent. So was Mr. Taylor. Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you to both counsel.